The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, thank you for being here this morning and sitting and practicing this way. I think it's a somewhat unusual thing for such a large group of people to come and spend hours silently together practicing. I appreciate it a lot. What I'd like to talk about is something that is a common aspect of meditation practice in Buddhism, considered part of it's called the five faculties, usually in English. Sometimes it's called the five spiritual faculties, sometimes the five controlling faculties. And these faculties are capacities we have, abilities we have, functionings that go on for us that we can tap into and be familiar with and use them to support the meditation practice that we do, support mindfulness practice. And these five are faith, effort or energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And so in the course of this, I'll give three talks today as part of this, and I'll want to focus on these five controlling faculties as part of the talks. But I want to give a little background to them, put them in a certain context for us to understand a little bit their value, or kind of where they come from, or background for them. The Pali word is indriya. So the pancha indriya, the five indriyas. And the word indriya comes from the word Indra. And Indra was a god, the supreme god in the time of the Buddha and his particular circles, the chief god of the pantheon of gods. And Indriya means the belonging to Indra, part of Indra or aspect of Indra. And so there's this kind of interesting idea that we have these, and Indra is kind of the chief god, is the god that controls everything, controls other gods or something like that. And so there's a reference of this kind of wonderful chief god with something inside of us, which is the chief things in us. They're the controlling faculties in us. And connecting it to this divinity, this divine being, is one of the reasons why people translate this as five spiritual faculties, because of this kind of connection. And so if you go back to, you know, pre-Buddhist India, to get a little bit kind of maybe a deeper sense of kind of the value of this and what we're talking about here. Before Buddhism, actually before the modern world, before there were electric lights, neon lights, I met a man once who said he came to New York City when they installed the first neon lights in the 1910s or something. So before lights, we didn't have what we call now light pollution. And you go out on a moonless night, the sky, the stars can be phenomenal. I don't know if you've been out far, far from urban areas where there's no lights. I've been in a variety of different places and away from any kind of lights, and it's just, you look at the sky, it's just spectacular. And all those stars. And then you have the Milky Way. And the Milky Way, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, can also be quite spectacular. Amazing kind of array of stars shining and bright. And the brilliance and the shininess and the luminosity of stars and moons and also the sun. And so in pre-Buddhist India, the word for heaven was svarga, which apparently, according to scholars of ancient Indian religions, language, meant light or shining or luminous. And that this Milky Way was kind of considered to be kind of, and this moon and also the sun, these shiny things, were kind of the places where some people would go when they died. And actually the word Indra also is supposed to come from a root word meaning to shine. So this is, you know, kind of a little interesting maybe. But what became more interesting, at least in terms of we get to understand Buddhism, is at some point before Buddhism arose, there developed the ideas in India that there was an intimate connection between the cosmos, the world, the gods, the everything out there, and what's inside of us. And that if you want to understand the ultimate, the absolute, the universe, you see it in yourself, or it's found here, or there's a replica here, or it is here somehow. And so rather than this brilliance of this bright light that the stars, the Milky Way, and the sun and the moon being external, the ancient Indian sages would say, you find it here in yourself. And that the fire of that supports this life, this universe, is found in ourselves. And or there's an intimate connection between these things, very close kind of a connection or equivalence or something. And then we come to Buddhism, and Buddhism also is very much about seeing connections between things, but the external universe and the gods kind of recede from the equation. And rather, the focus is really in Buddhism is really seeing what's here in ourselves. And so much so that the Buddha, took the word for the world and said, the world that I talk about is the world that exists in your own psychophysical being here. And in this pre-Buddhist world, even the gods are not supposed to, you know, the gods are out there kind of, but we're supposed to find something that's like equivalent in ourselves that's equivalent to the gods. So Indra is found in ourselves. And so we have inside ourselves these wonderful capacities, these abilities that we might just think about, oh, you know, I'm capable of being mindful and paying attention, that's nice. But here it's elevated in a certain kind of way that this is really, really special, really important. You know, I don't know if we want to say it's divine in status, but it's certainly not pedestrian in status. It's something, you know, very significant that we have. And so these capacities, these wonderful abilities we have, some people say that, some people feel that one of the most amazing things is that we can be aware. I mean, how did that happen? You know, many people take awareness for granted, but if you step back and think about it and reflect on what is in the world, is this thing awareness and to be conscious, it's pretty phenomenal that we should be a conscious and aware to begin with. And not only is it pretty rare, it's going to be rare for, you know, in the scale of galactic time, the amount of time you're going to be conscious is pretty small. you know, it happens to be like right now is your time to be conscious. It's like, you know, and you know, it's pretty phenomenal. And these other kind of vital functions that run through us, you know, it's the universe came together in this amazing way, and we have abilities, all kinds of capacities inside. And some of these capacities have a big impact. They're kind of controlling or impactful faculties. How they're used or not used have a big impact on us. And to tap into these faculties, these abilities, the human capacities that exist within us, and to elevate them to a valued status, these are important, they're precious, they're treasures. They're divine, they're spiritual, you know, whatever you want to call them, is, I think, a little bit implied by this idea, indriya. We're being pointing to something that exists in us. Not that we're importing from the outside, it's not a belief system, but it's kind of, the mindfulness helps us to connect to faculties, to forces, to activities, ways, movements, processes inside of us that are always here to some degree, but to recognize them, appreciate them, tap into them, give them an opportunity to have a controlling role, and controlling influence in a way that's supportive and helpful, so moves us in the direction that's helpful for us in our lives. So in the word jhana, which is sometimes is translated as, you know, absorption, certain kind of strong concentration states that people can experience. It's been said by people who apparently do this kind of etymological study that it comes from the word to burn. It's a burning. And I think if that's the case, I think of it as jhana is kind of like a state of mind, state of being, that's kind of like a candle flame that's burning, but there's no wind. And if you have a candle flame that's burning with no wind, it's dynamic, but it's unmoving. You know, it's kind of very still, and it can be very still, but we know it's like full of dynamism in there. It's like active in energy, but it's energy which is somehow being held in stillness, kind of. And so in jhana states, there's a lot of energy. Even when it's very peaceful states, there's a certain kind of energy that's flowing, that's burning from the inside, but that it's also very still. And it gets stiller and stiller, and less the winds of the mind blow less and less. And I talk about this because the idea is that there's something that can live in us, a fire, an energy, a sense, liveness, vitality, that can come alive within us, that can nourish us, fill us, be a power within us. That's not something we have to believe. It's not something we have to solve or fix, but rather it's kind of a unleashing or freeing or allowing or letting something to kind of surface and grow. So we have all these kind of things inside, these forces, these processes, these capacities that we can learn to recognize and unleash, recognize and let them burn freely, let them move through us. And so, and they can be very powerful. So this indriyas, these five indriyas, five faculties, when they're really strong in us and really moving through us, then they get a new name. And then they're called panchabala. And bala means power. So the five powers, so they can feel them and sense these are powers flowing through us. You know. And, you know, so you know, when Buddhism talks a lot about letting go, a lot about, you know, even words like emptiness sometimes, or not self, those kind of language, it kind of leaves us with holding it, but with nothing, kind of like leaves us without anything, kind of. And that's appropriate in the right way. But it could also kind of feel like there's nothing there then. But when you talk about, we have these indriyas, these things that belong to a god, flowing through us. I mean, suddenly, now it's getting, a little bit like, wow. This is not about, only about letting go. There's a kind of a strength here, a power here, something coming alive, vitality here. So the first of these five divine faculties, spiritual faculties, is English is usually translated as faith, Pali sada, in Sanskrit shraddha. And sometimes faith is seen, for some people, in English at least, as being a, what's your faith? Some people will interpret it to mean, what's your belief? So it's a cognitive thing. It's ideas that you've inherited, learned, and you have faith in these ideas, a tenant. But whatever the appropriate translation of sada is into English, it's not an abstract principles and ideas that we have to believe, but rather it's something that flows from the inside out. And what is it in the inside out that corresponds to faith or to sada? Some people translate it as confidence. Confidence, some people can feel more like a power, an energy, a vitality that flows from the inside out. And perhaps confidence is maybe a better translation. Many years ago, I read a detailed scholarly study by a Vedic scholar. Again, everything happened to his words. And again, I don't know if this is true, but it's what the scholar came up with, looking at the Rig Veda, the most ancient texts of India that survive, and said that in that literature, the word shraddha meant something like hospitality or invitation. It's kind of like because it had to do apparently with doing rituals where you invite the gods to come and partake of the offerings being offered. And so, it has to do with religious rituals, and so at some point maybe it translates into more like faith or trust or something. But the idea of hospitality, I think it's beautiful. Where does hospitality live in you? This invitation for something, it's openness, it's willingness. What is that? And how does that tap into faith or trust or confidence? What I'd like to suggest is that as a faculty, the capacity, a capability we have, that sada, or faith, gets awoken when we recognize something in ourselves, maybe that resonates with the teachings or the practices or the values or something that's being pointed to in this meditation teaching that we have, that we recognize, oh yeah. And there's a variety of things that people kind of wake up to, oh yeah, I recognize this. Sometimes it has to do with a certain degree of goodness, ethical purity perhaps that people, you feel in people, or integrity and in the teachings or something. Ah. Or maybe there's a sense of love that comes. You feel like you have, this is a place of love that I have, that this resonates with. Or a place of peace, or wholeness, or healing, or a sense of belonging. Something that kind of lives inside. Maybe, it's been very, very small, but it resonates. And this idea that it's inside of us as something very small is... it's represented with the Buddhist idea, the Buddha's idea, or the Buddha's using the idea of a seed to represent faith. That faith is a seed. And it's a seed that the rest of Buddhist practice is supposed to kind of germinate and let it grow. And this idea of a natural process of growth and flowering from a seed, I think represents a movement in practice where we're touching something deep inside, something that resonates, something we recognize, maybe intuit at first, inside of us, that begins slowly, oh yeah, this is true, this is right, this is home, this is you know, many different ways people feel something. This is good. And then this is something that I want to come from. This is what I want to have grow and develop in me. And so then we take this little seed of faith and we have confidence in it, we trust it, we develop it, and in order to let something grow and fill out. And so if we have a sense of a possibility of living a life without fear, that resonates with us, yeah, there's a little seed of that. And then practice is to take that seed and nourish it, or take that little candle flame and tend it. Tend this thing inside. And I very much appreciate the idea of practice being a tending, partly because we tend a fire. So we take this wonderful flame or wonderful force or vitality or thing we recognize inside, and we tend it. We don't make it, we don't fix it, we don't engineer it. We respect it. You better respect the fire. Be careful with it. But we tend it. And I think of tending is like attending or caring or nurturing. It's kind of those kind of words. And so to make room for something that's inside to begin to grow and develop. Many people who, when they do Buddhist practice, their approach is more, because that's how they live their lives perhaps, is to do it from the outside in. Read a lot of books. You know, try to get all the ideas and you know, lined up and make logic out of it or something. Or somehow approach it as an engineering project. You know, or you have to get all these things in line, and you know, and like there's a engineer outside who's, you know, up in the control tower, which is going to kind of make everything happen. And it doesn't have this organic feeling of something, of organic life that's kind of growing from a seed and flowing out from the outside. So we have a capacity, a faculty for confidence, faith, trust. Another person translates sada as conviction, hospitality, feeling of, you know, invitation, inviting reality. Show yourself to me. I'm here. Rather than me being the one who's in charge, let me invite something to move through me and be here. And I find it quite remarkable that it's possible to sit down, sit upright, and in conventional sense do nothing, and have this vitality and energies and movements or processes within that flow and develop and grow and expand. This inner light that can grow and kind of flow and expands. And maybe we have the Milky Way within. Imagine sitting in meditation as if you're sitting outdoors in a wonderful, refreshing summer night, maybe a moonless night, maybe at the edge of a lake, where it's completely safe for you to be at night, and seeing the Milky Way and the stars, and the bright, shiny thing, and maybe even the reflecting on the lake, and the stillness of the night, the vitality, the aliveness of the night, and maybe we feel our place in the universe, or we feel like who we are feels maybe, I don't know, minuscule, or who we are feels like it, kind of like we fit, or we kind of this big, big world, the context that we're in, that we're part of this natural world, and a sense of kind of awe, and maybe even sense of peace or majesty or largeness of it all, and just stillness of just sitting in the middle of this vastness. And some of the things that get so preoccupied with in urban life, you know, don't matter whatsoever. So imagine that we're sitting in meditation in an urban center with cars and traffic and bustling and people coming and going. But we're sitting this way still, and rather than being externally focused and thinking about the world out there, we discover the Milky Way and the stars and the vastness and the stillness within, and that the vitality of life, the specialness of it, you know, that it's all here within, flowing and moving and going. And that one of the things is faith, something inside that we recognize that is a good place to come from, to be alive from, to be vital from, that doesn't need to have a reason, doesn't need to have a worldly purpose, doesn't need to be assigned meaning, doesn't need to be there for a reason, but it's just that if we sit still and quiet and tap in deeply and free up deeply what's in here, there is this movement, there is a fire inside that wants to burn, to be here. And to make space for that, and open to it, be here for it. And part of the function of becoming meditation, letting the mind become quiet, is not so that you can stop existing somehow. Maybe I shouldn't exist. But rather, when the mind gets quiet, there's something we tap into, a freedom, a vitality that's here. And so one of the second of the indriyas is a word that's called virya. And sometimes in English it's translated as effort, sometimes as energy. Sometimes I've seen it's translated as strength. It's cognate, or it's related to the word vira, which means hero. So that gives you a kind of a different sense of effort, you know, energy, hero. I mean, you know, now you're ready to go home, heroic, you know. That's not what I signed up for, to be heroic. But it certainly gives it a certain kind of different flavor than just simply saying, you know, effort, and your mom says, make effort, you know, or something. You know, you have to, but, you know, just what is it that allows, what's the inner strength that allows for heroic effort? What is that like? What flows from that? I like the word vitality sometimes for it. And there's two sides of this word virya that I can think of. One is, in fact, vitality. So there can be a strong sense of chi, of energy, of vitality that's here, that is flowing, that keeps us present, keeps us awake, keeps us aware. Vitality, a kind of vitality which is kind of in some ways inseparable from being conscious or being awake or being aware. And sometimes it's born, sometimes it's unleashed, sometimes it kicks in and it's here for us, and sometimes it's not. It just feels so good when it's here. And the other part of effort is the kind of things that we engage the effort in, where we put our effort, vitality in, apply it. And so the idea of applying effort in the direction of those things which are skillful and those which are, avoid those which are unskillful. And this is where the wisdom side of practice comes into play. That we don't apply effort without some degree of wisdom. And the primary wisdom that is being applied is a wisdom that also can be born from the inside, born from a feeling or a sense or a kind of a tangible quality rather than, you know, some idea, this is what you should do. And it's very basic. It has to do with a clear, you know, developing sense of what is ouch and what is ah. Do you have, you know, oh, that hurts, that's painful, that's diminishing, that's contracting, that's tense, that's straining, that's darkening in some way. This is putting clouds over the vast Milky Way between me and the stars. Versus that which is, that which is opening or easeful or satisfying or freeing or brings a sense of this, the light opens up, the clouds go, and it's clear. This is this feels healthy, healing, feels whole. So to have a visceral sense of this from the inside out, then it's, you know, as simple as you put your hand on the hot stove or you take it off. You don't need to have a religious teaching to tell you to take the hand off the hot stove. It's just like pretty obvious. And so part of this, you know, making this effort is to be attentive and attuned to very carefully to what kind of, how to be present, how to be here in a way that has the awe factor as opposed to the ouch. And so how do we make effort in practice? So the very nature of the effort, the way we bring our attention to the present moment, the way we come back to the present moment, doesn't have ouch qualities in it. So if your mind wanders off and you get angry with yourself for the wandering off mind, that's ouch. If you jerk your mind back and kind of say, I got to bear down here, that's more of an ouch quality. But if you notice the mind goes off in thought and you say, well, I guess that's what minds do, but we're going to do something different now. I'm going to invite the breathing back in. That whole process of just is more, you know, doesn't cause the ouch. And so to make the effort to look for that, how do I do this? How do I wake up? How do I come alive? How do I let my vitality flow? How do I let this little seed that's in here of goodness, of freedom, of warmth, of love, of safety, of peace, belonging, whatever it might be, how can I make the effort that allows that seed to germinate, to flow and grow? And so, to end this for now, the idea I'm trying to convey here is that practice has a lot to do with what we're allowing to awaken within us and flow and come from the inside out. As opposed to we're up in this control tower trying to make something happen as if the body is just like a foreign entity that we're somehow trying to, you know, manipulate so that something will happen. It's more like, what's in here? What's going on here? And part of the faith part is trusting this inner life, trusting what's in here to flow and grow and move and make space for it, and know how to trust with the wisdom to know that our role is to have effort that moves more towards what's clarifying than what's obscuring, that what's freeing versus what's ties us up, that is more towards peace than to greater agitation and conflict, that's more towards ease rather than dis-ease, something like that. And so we're finding our way, but it's all kind of, it's more like we're making room for something to happen rather than being the engineers who are trying to make something happen. And for some people, that's a huge, paradigm shift to get quiet and still and trust something from the inside flowing. So that's the Indriyas, beginning of the talk. So the rest of the day, we'll talk about this some more and talk about the other Indriyas, the other ones. So it's time for lunch. And we have lunch until 1:15. And there is a fair amount of food left over from breakfast that we offer the people who are here. So if you don't have lunch or would like more lunch, there's bagels and oatmeal you can make and nuts and walnuts and probably yogurt in the refrigerator. And maybe all those leftovers can be put out on the counter. So help yourself with those leftovers.